being a tech day today, I want to talk about some applications and things that a lot of people are using, differences between like viral video applications and standard video applications, and even the newer upcoming transferred videos, and how does this tech really make a difference in our lives, and then also like what does it mean for our children? So with technology comes like applications, and I've talked about applications. It's like a software, something you put on the computer or something you download into the computer or something you use with the computer. And it's not an actual computer. It's nothing like that. I mean, maybe if you remember those like TigerCom, little handheld devices that actually were a really makeshift video game. Yeah, okay, there you go. Kind of like an application in hardware form, but let's just keep going. So what these applications do, they all differ. And over the years, there's been this like definite change in the way we really use applications. I mean, do we still use the old ones? Yes. But the more common ones nowadays are completely different than what they were, I mean, just 15 years ago. So applications, when they first started coming out, they were more like, okay, we need to do spreadsheets, we need to do computer, you know, calculus. They were all numbers related. The user interface could be as extremely simple as possible, and sometimes literally just an output, and you do everything on the keyboard. And the reason for that is because like what we had available to us in the programming system or code just wasn't that big, and all that stuff had to be developed and eventually would be developed by software. So someone would come out with a piece of software that would allow someone to do something that would allow them to come either up with the firmware or software or OS or something else to do something else. And it became this software designs better software. And that's, I think, why there's so many people thinking that they can build fully programmable AI that will do things like build your web template, build you this, build you that. And when you get down and dirty into the code, what you're actually seeing isn't an artificial intelligent system, but just a well-crafted, programmed application. So you're actually building an application or a generator, what they used to be called, to do something else. And all you're doing is you're assigning values to options, and you're allowing the math that the computer is already doing to be used for a secondary option. It's like if I made a loaf of bread to feed my children, well, couldn't it also at the same time feed me? So we're just using like the same output as much as we can, and that's what it comes down to. So like normally when you're programming something and you're putting in your application, you're building a generator or something, normally when you're building a website, you're gonna have like just your where everything's at, for example. It's gonna have some of that programming like we see on the other one, the AI supposedly. And what that means is they don't have like a header weight number 16. You know, you don't have because the information in the header determine a weight size of your header programmably. But can we? Yes, and that's kind of what we do. But it's not actually what people always thought it as. People see AI, they see the movie AI, and they're like, oh wow. And when people think of apps, they see movie apps, and still nothing like this. This is whole movie trend. Anything you see in a movie or TV, you have to disconsider. Even Mr. Robot was unbelievably on point, and it was like that on purpose. But the director and the creator and stuff, they were like, hey, we had to look at what text was on the screen, and we had to determine, okay, everything on that screen needs to be legit, It doesn't need to be someone's actual stuff, but it needs to be correct. And it's one of the few ones I've ever seen where the technical side was on point, 100%. And they even showed flaws in systems like Photon Mail and other things, whereas like people didn't realize that even the most secure systems can already be broken programmatically. So applications you build, they always become better because of other applications before. So right now we're in a state where we are building applications that are actually more secure than previous applications. And because of that, we're going to eventually get to a point where the application is fully automated. There's no AI. There's nothing like any kind of smart, like human type of technology running and driving it. Can we get a computer to think more like a human brain, to have central processing distribution and similar to the human brain? Of course. And can we break down how the brain works through chip determination, where we actually use different types of chips or computer parts to do different parts of the internal structuring of the brain to basically build a computer that is a brain? Yes. Is it like a human? No. I mean, yeah, it's going to work like a human. It's going to act like not like a human, but the way that electricity flows will. And it's not going to be anything like what people think. And I think that's the first problem right there in what we're about to talk about. If that seemed a bit jumbled, I apologize. I had to fit so much information into that one little bit. And there's not a script or anything, so like I had to do it on the go, on the fly. I do spend time beforehand, up to a week, actually researching stuff and looking stuff up, so I'm not just sitting here and spitting crap. That's why a lot of times I have somewhat type of guide or bibliography where I say, all right, this is where about where it came from, this is how you find it. And of course, in case you didn't know, I use pre-search just about all the time. Sometimes the old phrases spit out, but I use freesearch.org almost all the time. It's not sponsored by them. I literally just use it all the time on my phone, on my Chromebook. And so I guess if you're trying to find out what I'm talking about, you go to pre-search, you hit the Google tab, type it in, you get paid to search. And it's going to bring up information that you're going to want to find. Just because like when we're talking about applications, we're talking about stuff being better. Stuff like pre-search, it allows you to do like anonymous searching on systems that collect all your data. So anonymously, so you're going to be John Doe number 158,722,864 that searched today. And that account, that means nothing, because the next time you come in, you're going to have assigned a different number. So, I mean, you see what I'm saying? Like, you can just, it helps, because it's actually better. And it doesn't just, they have a decentralized search, but they have other DuckDuckGo and all these other things. And the options are there because of API. When we're talking about application programming interface, we're talking about using things in an application programmatically. Now, this is also some people consider to be artificial intelligence, because you're like, well, how does it know? Because the character, the string that I send you, that looks pretty much like a link a lot of times. The bit of data I send you has a specific order, has a specific order. And because of that order, it's a vector. And because it's a vector, we can go down that string, down the vector line, start from the point down to the edge. And if that edge never ends, that's fine, because we'll just get more data, more data, more data, more data. And we collect, we use, we insert. And so it's kind of like building these APIs or these program interfaces, you're just saying, okay, this spot on my page, this input, this option, this thing, this button I can click, this interaction equals such and such name, and it has a value of such and such. And I tend to call this a weight. I look at a web page as having like a three-dimensional physical shape, and what that means is like it's like a space of its own, like a physical space, like outer space, and it's got depth. So going from your screen all the way down, there can be an infinity amount of depth there can be an infinity amount of left, right, up, down, to the corners, in any direction. This three-dimensional in this infinite space called HTML. And these are what programs allow us to do. There used to be a time where the only thing we had was an edge. You could just see a straight edge, not even the plane, just the edge of the plane. And if you've ever watched, I do want to say it's Line World or something like that. I wish I could remember what it's off the top of my head. Anyways, it'll come to me probably, hopefully. But if you've ever watched this movie, it was made by like scientists and stuff, and it actually explains so much in a single effing movie. It's cuckoo crazy. And I say that like the Wacky Bird is cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, because it is a simple basic concept of how things and evolve mentally, physically, emotionally. And it's not, when you do it, it can be used for so much, like in life, in world, in society, with people, with creatures, with technology, and in this case, with applications. It started off as a plane, the edge of a plane, and then programmatically, we learned how to turn that and make it a plane, an actual full plane. Now we have a space called a window screen that we can use. Instead of it just being some text that print out or an LED screen that scrolls by and it gives us our information, that's the edge of the plane. We learned how to turn that and make it a screen, make it a full plane. Now we have a limited space that we can use, and we learned how to manipulate that space, stretch the backside out as far as it can to go as far back as it can, and then we learn how to stretch the edges as far out as they can, and then programmatically we figured out a way to loop them into themselves like a mobility strip, and boom, we have an infinite space within a space. It's fourth dimension, actually. No, it is sixth dimension. There's a lot of people that say fourth dimension is space within a space. But that's true. That's the limited space within a space. Kind of like how you have, if you look at your finger or your hand, you have a structure between the edge outside and the other edge outside of your hand. So within that small little space is other stuff. That's your fourth dimension. No joke. And then what do you say fifth dimension is? The space inside that. So the cellular and molecular walls of that. The sixth dimension is even further than that. It's the cellular walls and stuff of the stuff of inside of that, which is actually more like atoms and particles and molecules. And when we talk about applications, the sixth dimension is the infinite loop. Now we can have an infinite number of anything within this space. And then now, 2018, I believe, a person named Alcor, Mr. Alcor, figured out how to contain this mobile digital strip of infinite outer type space, full three-dimensional within JavaScript. And now that we can take a very simplistic code and use it to make an entire internet structure, we now have applications that are internet, their own intranet, if you want to call it that. And basically what that means is internet is an interconnected system of computers, and an intranet is an internal network of computers, and that means that it does not go out to anyone else. It's all privatized. It's all, whoever's connected to it, that's all supposed to be connected to it. Now you do have ways to connect internet to intranet, and stuff like Radius was probably the most common while I was learning this type of stuff in the 96 97 98 99 2000 2001 2002 2003, and that just because the more simple it is, the more you can build onto it. That's why Bitcoin as an application, and it's like unbelievably simple. And what that means is that the way wallets and nodes and miners interact is it's the most simple. It's the bottom line. And there's a lot of people out in the cryptocurrency space that's like dogged on Bitcoin because, hey, it is the most simple out there. It's the bottom line. It's the simple. We can make it better. We can do more with it. We can do this. We can do that. And so they build their own currency that does that, which is great. Because if Bitcoin had already done that, that other currency wouldn't exist. And so this is how why that is like that. So we have applications making better applications. We're at a point now where we can have what people believe is AI, from movies and stuff. That's, again, very not real, but that's more realistic today than what it was 2 years ago. Just 2 years ago, if you up to it was like May, April, June. That's when he invented it. It's when he started the itty bitty protocol, the itty bitty site system, itty bitty site. Go to an itty dot bitty dot site. This is not sponsored by him at all. He doesn't even know about this. I don't know the guy. Only way I know about the guy is through the site, through his GitHub, through information about him, through his Twitter. That's it. I don't know the guy. So he invented that system, and what that allows us to do, because it's so simple, is we can build on top of it. We can build more. We can do more. Because of his system, I had actually built a fully functional application, has no internet call, only uses the web browser, doesn't actually need to be online, and it is a fully decentralizable application because it is its own intranet. So applications really have basically just allows us to do anything now. That's really what it seems like. And so people out there trying to build like human smart applications? Kinda. They're trying to build applications that can mimic a human specifically. They want to be able to mimic you perfectly to you, simply to know what you might want. That's it. People are also taking those same systems and trying to tweak them to become you. Now that's what I meant why it's, you know, it's still not possible what you see in movies. It seems more possible. It's way more possible than it was just 2 years ago. Because it if it can predict what you're gonna do correctly, say for 10 years, after you die, it could perfectly represent you digitally. In VR, on your great 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 grandkids' screens, and say you are one of the greats, or your dad, or your mom, or your grandparents who are still alive right now are one of the greats. If they have at least 10 years of their life to live, there's a chance you can make something that's almost them. If they have 25 years left in their life, you can make something that's almost perfectly to them. And if there's 50, well, actually, I think 68 years of their life for it to learn, it will resemble them perfectly. And it's not actually a smart person, it's nothing like that. It's just a really well-programmed application. And we're building applications that actually build other applications through the APIs, programming interface, the application programming interface can be automated. Automated programming interfaces. Now you're getting into a thing where it's like automating in its internal structures that you've already developed and designed. So now you can just basically build something that's easy, just basic. It doesn't matter what it looks like. Build something, has inputs, and then you build something on top of that to put in the inputs. And then you put something on top of that for the user to input. And then you put something on top of that for the user to see. Now you have, see, it's a huge structure, and that is why they think it's like a human, because they're like, well, how, they don't understand how it works, and they think that there's some more to it because they see it in movies like that. And because there's so much lying going on in the world, there's more of our kids and our younger people, they don't understand when they're seeing this stuff that it's just someone else had a program that, someone else had to kill that, someone else had to do something for that. You know, they don't understand that because they see in movies where there's so much automation. And maybe in another 20, 25 years, we'll get to a point where people don't need to work. There's robots that do it. And robots that fix those robots. And other robots that just fix those robots. And eventually you have a loop of robots fixing robots because, well, you only need two kinds. You need one that fixes robots that's not itself. And then one that fixes robots that is itself. That's it. So, like, one that can fix other robots pretty much of anything. And one robot that just fixes robots that fixes robots. because other robots of that same kind can fix those other same robots. So robot fixing robots can fix robot fixing robots. Get what I'm saying? So you only need that kind to fix all the other robots that fix all the other robots. And that's kind of how the apps are working. There, something is doing something to something because of something. And even your cars work more like that now. Like your cars, when you go flip the button to roll down the window, you telling something to tell something. Well, like you're telling a device to tell the central computer you need to roll down the window. Then the central computer says, okay, tell the motor. Now the main thing then says to the motor, hey, we need the window down. Here's your information about the window down. And then that window motor has to tell the central computer, hey, I'm about to turn on the window. And the central computer says, okay. Then the window goes down. Because then that central processing unit, the computer just said, okay, has to actually tell the actual motor, see what electricity use, go down. Stop. And they might have that whole processing super fast. And they use special star network connectors and things and just different ways to distribute the connection faster. So amongst a much larger set of computers and stuff. But at the same time, it causes more problems. And we're seeing that in programs all the time where a program breaks because of its own internal structure. And that's why we have a lot more breaches, and we also have a lot more people, a lot better use of computers. So the internet security just hasn't caught up to what people can do, because the people getting paid to protect half time are not nearly as good as the people not getting paid to break. So what we have now, like I'm saying, is like we have a lot of lies in the world. So it was eventually going to make its way to the internet. It did pretty quickly in the 80s, I think. Well, internet lies became a thing. I grew up hearing the phrase. Well, I guess I was much older. I was in my late teens, almost a young adult. And it was like, don't trust everything you read on the internet. Nowadays, we have to say, don't trust everything you read, no matter where it's at. Whether it's on the internet, offline, in a book, it doesn't, you always have to question it now. And that's just because lying is like this big thing. And even in applications right now, like we have these video platforms. What's the difference between a regular video platform, a viral video platform, and one of the newer type of video platforms, the share forms? So the standard video platform is there's a machine that holds your stuff, all your data. And then you have an application that can pull data. Then you have application that works with that controls user information. And basically is like where your user sits, okay? When you say, okay, I'm a user using this, this is basically where you sit right there. There's an application that works with that. That is what the user sees and interacts with, okay? So when you're interacting with the first layer, you can skip past the layer you sit at to get to the last layer to pull data. So you can pull data. And that's through certain types of API. So like I could be logged in using screen A, and then there's a way to programmatically find screen 1,227B that I'm not sitting at. Skip and bypass user this rather than there or not, and go directly to the program that allows me to pull data, pull their videos or anything like that, and then I can pull those videos. Now, that's not actually a break in the system or a breach if it's through an actual API, but because of API, there is a break there. There's a way to do that, and that causes a lot of problems. That basically means that while you're watching the video and you're on screen A, looking at screen something, whatever, B, because of program, skip that user and you're in the memory bank application and you are getting information by streaming a video. Okay, any number one of those servers that your video sits on could actually be as many as like 100 different servers that you're pulling data from in order to have this fast service. So don't look at yourself like you're pulling from one, you're pulling from 100 or more, pulling from tons In reality, probably like 8, 9, 10 different servers you're actually pulling from, spread across the globe. And a lot of times they're trying to be more centralized to you, but the one you're actually connected to start the whole process might be further away. So they try to find ones closer to you or ones that have a faster connection to you, even though your main connection is this one, because that computer is going to distribute the information to the other ones. And so we have that same break there. So if another computer connects to that one that you're connected to, that is gathering data for you, to you, because it doesn't actually send it through your pipeline, it sends it indirectly to you through other pipelines. Well, it can, if a computer connects to that, or a user can connect to that on the same server you're on, there's a way to scrub that server actively and find your data stream and then indirectly get to you, because that's how the system works. That's the only way the API works, is you have to be able to do something similar to that. Scrubbing it, and it's not a process that's done on that server, it's actually done on another computer. So you don't even know what's happening. And that's why it's like, why don't you protect against it? Yeah, try it. Good luck. I mean, when people have done types of connection sensitivity and protocols and protection systems, even Sentinel by McAfee didn't quite work. So it's just a system that doesn't really, it doesn't all, it's just, it's harder than you think. And it's a very simple thing to do. It's just so scary. So then they can get to you using API. And never go back through any other screens, because that's where they're looking. Like, the way we look for stuff, because of how everything's done, we can only do it in like a couple of spots. Because if we do it anywhere else, well, everything's gonna breach. Everything's gonna woo, woo, woo. It's gonna be mad. Because they built a system that does these types of breaks. And so that's a standard video platform. That's exactly how it works. Now that you know a lot about the back end, it's gonna be a little bit easier for the next one, okay? TikTok, for example, Bilibili, for example, these are viral video platforms. The system, the computer valuing structure really depends on like a time scale. So it's got, instead of it just being number of views or number of interactions or number of likes, because all that doesn't matter, it also has this time factor. And so imagine the same structure, but now there's another cog in the wheel. So between you and the program that pulls data, there's another piece of structure or program in there. It's like a whole nother program that just basically decides what you want to watch. This is a human mimicking program. And because of only things you were doing is liking, sharing, commenting, retweet, basically repost or re whatever, and share out externally, and where you shared externally, and how often you viewed something. Some of them will even check your camera to see if you're watching and use that too. And those ones, they gather a lot more data than you'd really want. And those ones are scary. And so, what you're looking at is, because of the limited amount of resources it really has, it can be very fast and it can be very accurate, because there's not much to look at. And now, after you use this for a while, you get to a point where you just can't stop, because it mimics you so well you don't even realize it. And it's saying, you're gonna want to see this, and you're gonna want to see that, and you're gonna want to see this, and you're gonna want to see that. And it just gets creepy. Now, this is why people think it's like the AI you see in movies, but it's not. It's really just its own type of human mimicking AI. And it's not, it's artificial intelligence, it's pre-programmed intelligence. So what's the difference between that and a share video platform? So a share video platform is there's another layer. So you still have this mimicking thing right after you, before the application that pulls data. But now there's another layer behind that one, where it's like a whole nother application that memorizes in a new form of way. So it basically builds a vector or a string starting from this point that never ends in the other direction like array, and it assembles data on this array, and whichever data has the highest number is always moved to the front, and with the lowest number always moved to the back. So if something is relevant, it's at the very front or it's closer to the front, so it's found faster and sooner. And if it's further to the back, it's harder to see, but it's still there. And what this does is now that program that mimics you now has a unique way of memorizing you actively, programmatically, dynamically, by having multitudes of these deep learning vectors. And this is super creepy because now, because previously, whenever you, if you was to start just kind of not acting like yourself or hand your phone to someone else and let them use your TikTok or whatever, it actually, if you do that on TikTok, it will get to a point where it'll show videos you might not like, or it's going to show you videos that as a person likes because it only remembers so much. Or else you'd have to have like super huge computers to hold all this storage of information of every little thing you've ever. But now, we can take general data points of information that's calculated with all the other stuff that it's already doing in that first one. And it's putting that stuff into a very small amount of space on a computer server. So there's just another set of more servers. So now you have more breaks in the chain that can get to you. So now you're more susceptible to attacks. And that's, but the those sharing platforms, the way they really work is they're like mostly for the numbers. So I mean, like it's really there to prove you had this many shares or that many of this. And a lot of platforms use these programs in the back end of their program. There's Facebook that has been known to use these types of that with them it's share all type of applications where it's an actual separate system that keeps a deep programmable memory of a everything you share, how many times and where you share to. Because three things, I think it's like three or five things it actually collects. And the only reason why it does it is to figure out who to buy next. What company do we buy next? Who's our next competition? Wow. You didn't even think that your data. You just thought your data was being, sold to ads. Your data actually gets used for more than that. And that's the problem with our programs. We've now built programs so good, they lie to everyone. If you're using TikTok, most of the TikToks that are super viral are straight up lies. Most of the video sharing or the share alls or the different share deep memory systems lie to your users. And how do those lie to your users? Well, the first ones lie to your users because normally like the TikTok example, a lot of them are just straight up lies. The person mimicked the situation in the video so well you didn't notice it. And because it's a video, you thought, oh, it's legit, and it's not. And there's people on TikTok that just go around looking for super viral TikToks and disprove them, to prove to people why they're being lied, you're being lied to. So a share all is lying to people because when you go onto a platform and they give you options with share systems, share apps, these deep memory monitoring apps, they don't even really have to tell you they're there. They don't ever have to tell you that. They actually tell you somewhere in the thing that They will use your data for a multitude of things, including marketing. And that's what we're talking about, marketing. So now, if you've gotten at all, at any point in time, upset at hearing that what was actually going on, now that you know that it's just marketing, are you even upset anymore? You should still be. And yeah, I mean, just think about that. For the past decade, almost everything you use online, in the clear net, it's the standard internet, the internet you can Google, the internet you can pre-search, the internet you can DuckDuckGo, the internet you can use Stockpile on, anything like that, crawlers, and it's pretty much been a lie. It's pretty much been a lie. And if you were using the dark internet, it's still pretty much a lie. And if you're using an internet beyond the dark internet, you start getting to reality. You get sometimes some unbelievably creepy stuff, but these people aren't going to lie to you, because they don't have to lie to you. Everywhere else on the internet, they have to lie to you. When you're on the clear net, if you're not lying, you're probably doing the internet wrong. And I don't really mean that. I mean, that's a meme thing, but it's like kind of like a joke, because that's just how the internet really works. Tons of scams, tons of lies from the media, tons of lies from all the applications and everything you use, Google, everyone. And it's just now recently that programs and people and things have been coming out true to open source idealism, where it is about the freedom of the people and the freedom of the technology and the freedom of the us. And that, you know, it's like now we're just not getting into that, because programs were able to make programs better, and so better that they were able to monitor everything, and then so better they're able to bypass that monitoring. And it's now, thanks to things like Alcor, what he's done, we'll actually be able to build an internet that is censorship resistant, where you can't take a web page down. You couldn't take Silk Road down, because stuff like Hashnet and a Meshnet, you can delete the save, but you can't delete the build. That little bit is, you know, you can delete the save, but you can't delete the build. That's legit. You can actually build a Hashnet page or an anybody site page that's so absolutely full of entropy, full of information, that the link that you have to build to view it would be within hundreds of thousands of characters long. And it creates this unusual security, because you would have to guess that, and that the longer that gets, the harder it's going to be even for supercomputers to figure out. Quantum computers are the next generation of app-destructing systems that will be able to guess our security, even on programmable security. But we might be able to go back into 1980, 1970, 1990 and pull some of the worst internets that were in existence, and some of them still exist to this day. We can pull their protocols and using with itty bitty site and build the most difficult system to get into. And just like that, today's outro was sponsored by Private Paper Generator. Where the generator system that they are trying to get as a dApp really is where you can share your private thoughts online through the generator. On your screen, if you're on Anchor, click the screen to go to 3dd.in/PPGEN, because that's the private paper generator where you're going to be able to make and build your own articles, your own journals, your own diary, whatever you want on digital paper, and then connect it through a news chain and build an immutable chain of your thoughts.